accomplishment. VOA won the hit. Said you hated the...
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Katie Weaver, Gregory Stockel, and Brian Lynn. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Katie Weaver.
A study of meteorites has found more evidence that space rocks may have brought chemicals to Earth that helped start life on the planet. The meteorites studied had landed in Australia, Canada, and the United States. Earlier research on the objects showed they contained 3 of the 5 chemical components necessary to form DNA and RNA. DNA is the molecule that carries genetic instructions in living things. RNA is the molecule important to the operation of genes. Researchers said recently they have now identified the final 2 chemicals. That information comes from Yasuhiro Oba of Hokkaido University's Institute of Low Temperature Science in Japan. Oba was the lead writer of the study that was published in Nature Communications. The research findings support the idea that meteorites could have been an important source of organic compounds necessary for the emergence of Earth's first organisms, said study co-writer Danny Glavin of NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Maryland. Scientists have been seeking to better understand how chemical compounds came together to form a living thing able to reproduce itself. The formation of DNA and RNA would be an important event, as these molecules contain the instructions to build and operate organisms. There is still much to learn about the chemical steps that led to the origin of life on Earth, Glavin said. He added, "This research certainly adds to the list of chemical compounds that would have been present on Earth before the emergence of life." The researchers examined material from 3 meteorites. One fell in 1950 near the town of Murray in the U.S. state of Kentucky. Another fell in 1969 near the town of Murchison in Australia's Victoria state. The final meteorite fell in 2000 near Tagish Lake in the Canadian province, British Columbia. All 3 are made of rocky material thought to have formed early in the solar system's history. They are carbon-rich, with the Murchison and Murray meteorites containing about 2% organic carbon by weight, and the Tagish Lake meteorite containing about 4% organic carbon. Carbon is a primary ingredient of organisms on Earth. All 3 meteorites contain a very complex mixture of organic molecules, most of which have not yet been identified, Glavin said. Earth formed about 4.5 billion years ago. In its early days, it was hit by meteorites, comets, and other material from space. The planet's first organisms were simple microbes in the seas. The earliest known fossils are of marine microbial life dating to around 3.5 billion years ago. The two chemical components discovered in the latest study are called cytosine and thymine. The five would not have been the only chemical compounds necessary for life. Among other things needed were sugars, fatty acids, and amino acids, which are components of proteins and enzymes. Oba said, "The present results may not directly explain the beginning of life on the Earth, but it does help to understand what organic molecules were on the early Earth before life formed," he said. I'm Katie Weaver.
Many chicken farmers in the United States are keeping their birds inside during a spread of bird flu. The series of outbreaks has led to the killings of 35 million farm birds in the U.S. The United States Department of Agriculture has advised farmers to keep their birds inside to avoid infection. Specialty chicken farmers who raise free-range chickens are no exception to the policy. Free range means the chickens move without restrictions inside and out. So egg sellers need to update the buying public about the new farming conditions, industry observers say. Buyers usually pay more for eggs from these chickens than those produced on large corporate farms. Reasons differ. Some people think organic eggs are a healthier choice, while others might favor the taste. Still others might say organic eggs are a better choice for the environment or come from a more humane process. American officials say keeping farm birds inside is the safest policy for now. They note that the entire chicken population on a single farm must be killed even if one member gets bird flu. The virus can also infect humans, though experts say the risk is low. In France, the flu is doing similar damage. The nation's government has required farmers to keep chickens indoors since November. Reuters news agency reported, however, that some stores and other businesses are still identifying the chicken products as free range. "I didn't know that they had to stay inside," said Josephine Barry. The 34-year-old was looking at eggs for sale at a small store in Paris. She said, "So it's not really free range anymore." And she added, "I suppose there is no other choice because of bird flu, but they could say so." Animal doctors say birds that can go outside are at a much greater risk of getting bird flu, because birds that travel can spread the disease. The U.S. Department of Agriculture suggests farmers keep birds produced for food indoors as long as the bird flu outbreak is ongoing, but has not required it. The U.S. outbreak is the second worst in history, with more than 35 million birds killed this year. Farmers in France have killed nearly 16 million birds to stop the spread in its worst outbreak. Infections have also hit nations including Britain, Italy, and Spain. European requirements to keep chickens indoors have left some buyers unhappy, even when sellers post signs telling buyers of the change. "At the end of the day, you still pay the price of free-range eggs or organic eggs when the fowls have actually never seen the sky," said Marc Dossem, a 52-year-old shopper in a large store in the French capital. The European Union and British marketing standards permit for free-range egg-laying chickens to be kept inside for up to 16 weeks before companies must inform buyers. U.S. officials do not require organic egg producers to inform buyers on food containers when unexpected events like bird flu change production practices, the Agriculture Department said. I'm Gregory Stockel.
Google says it has added ways for people to request that some personal information not be included in online search results. In a recent announcement, the company said it would now let people request that some of their personal details be removed from Google searches. Such details could include information like phone numbers, email, and physical addresses. The new policy also permits the removal of information that could aid criminals aiming to steal people's identities. This could include login information used to visit websites. Google said in a statement it believes that open access to information is important, but it added privacy and online safety go hand in hand. The new policy is empowering people with the tools they need to protect themselves and keep their sensitive, personal, identifiable information private, the statement said. Google had earlier permitted people to request that highly personal details that could cause direct harm be removed. That included information made public through a method called doxing. To dox someone means to publicly identify or publish private information about the person in a malicious way. In addition, Google has long permitted the removal of sensitive financial information that could be used for fraudulent activities. But in its latest announcement, the company said it decided to expand its earlier policy. It did this because personal information is increasingly being used in new ways online. The new policy recognizes that even having basic personal contact information openly available online can present risks. The company said it had received numerous requests for new ways to remove that kind of material as well. Google said when examining individual requests, it will study all information on a website to avoid limiting the availability of useful details. This could include information appearing on government or other official websites. In its latest announcement, Google noted another recent policy change that also aims to protect personal privacy. That policy permits people under age 18 to request the removal of their images from Google search results. But the company's statement warns that information blocked from search results does not mean it cannot be found on the Internet. It's important to remember that removing content from Google search won't remove it from the internet, the company said. If removing material from the internet is desired, people are advised to make a request with the organization that hosts the information, Google added. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. We continue the story of America's 42nd president, Bill Clinton. He was a popular and successful president who was re-elected in 1996. But he also became only the second president in American history ever to be put on trial in Congress. Clinton's past in Arkansas became the source of accusations and questions about his character as he was running for president. These included questions about financial dealings with a land development company called Whitewater. In January of 1994, President Clinton asked Attorney General Janet Reno to appoint an independent lawyer to lead an investigation. She named a Republican, but some critics said her choice was too friendly to the Clinton administration. He was replaced by another Republican, Kenneth Starr. In 1995, the Senate Judiciary Committee began its own investigation of the president. The committee later reported that it had not found evidence of any crimes. However, because the committee was led by Democrats, there was continuing suspicion of the president among Republicans. The main cause of that suspicion dated back to a purchase of land in Arkansas years earlier. Bill and Hillary Clinton had bought the land in 1978, the year he was first elected governor of that state. The Clintons formed the Whitewater Development Company with Susan and James McDougal. The goal was to sell vacation homes along a river. However, the company did poorly. James McDougal also owned Madison Guarantee Savings and Loan, for which Hillary Clinton did legal work. Madison failed during the 1980s. The McDougals were found guilty of wrongdoing in connection with that failure. A former local judge in Little Rock, the state capital, also became part of the story. In 1994, David Hale pleaded guilty to charges of cheating the federal government. That case was in connection with a lending company he owned and was not connected to Whitewater. But Hale accused Bill Clinton of having pressured him while governor to loan money to Susan McDougal and other politically influential people. Clinton denied the accusations. During the president's first term, investigators sought billing records for Hillary Clinton's past legal work for James McDougal. They wanted to know, in connection with the Whitewater investigation, how much time she had spent on that work. The First Lady said she could not find the records. Then, in January of 1996, the billing records appeared without explanation in the White House. That mystery only added to the suspicions of some Americans. Others thought Kenneth Starr was just wasting taxpayer money on his investigation of the Clintons. They felt it was just for political reasons. The Whitewater investigation became increasingly complex and difficult to follow. In the end, President Clinton was never charged with any wrongdoing in connection with his financial dealings. But his legal problems did not stop there. In 1994, a former Arkansas state employee named Paula Jones sued President Clinton. She brought a civil action accusing him of sexual harassment while governor of Arkansas. In her lawsuit, she said he had asked her for sex. A federal judge dismissed her case for lack of evidence. Paula Jones appealed that ruling. Her lawyers said they wanted to prove that Clinton had a pattern of such behavior with female employees, including while president. They suspected that these included a 21-year-old woman named Monica Lewinsky. Lewinsky had worked as an unpaid intern in the White House. Kenneth Starr was still investigating the Whitewater case early in 1998. He received permission to include Lewinsky in his investigation.
Hi, how'd you know it was me?
Same caller ID.
Oh, what's it say?
Linda Tripp.
A former friend of Monica Lewinsky, Linda Tripp, had given Starr tape recordings of her telephone conversations with the younger woman.
I hate him.
No, you don't. You hate his behavior at times.
In the recordings, Lewinsky talked about her relationship with the president. What she told Linda Tripp conflicted with the information she gave to lawyers for Paula Jones. She had told them that the relationship had not been sexual. Lawyers for Paula Jones also questioned President Clinton. He, too, denied that the relationship with Monica Lewinsky had been sexual. On January 26, 1998, the president stated his denial to the American public.
But I want to say one thing to the American people. I want you to listen to me. I'm going to say this again. I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. I never told anybody to lie. Not a single time, never. These allegations are false, and I need to go back to work for the American people.
Later in the year, the president agreed to answer questions before a federal grand jury.
The opening statement I made is that I had inappropriate, intimate contact. I take full responsibility for it. It wasn't her fault, it was mine. I do not believe that I violated the definition of sexual relations I was given by directly touching those parts of her body with the intent to arouse or gratify. And that's all I have to say.
This was the first time an investigating jury had ever called a president to testify while in office.
This afternoon in this room, from this chair, I testified before the Office of Independent Counsel and the grand jury. I answered their questions truthfully, including questions about my private life, questions no American citizen would ever want to answer. Still, I must take complete responsibility for all my actions, both public and private. And that is why I am speaking to you tonight.
After his appearance, the president went on national television and admitted the nature of his relationship with Monica Lewinsky.
As you know, in a deposition in January, I was asked questions about my relationship with Monica Lewinsky. While my answers were legally accurate, I did not volunteer information. Indeed, I did have a relationship with Ms. Lewinsky that was not appropriate. In fact, it was wrong.
He said his actions were a personal failure, but he denied trying to get her to lie about the relationship.
But I told the grand jury today, and I say to you now, that at no time did I ask anyone to lie, to hide or destroy evidence, or to take any other unlawful action. I know that my public comments and my silence about this matter gave a false impression. I misled people. including even my wife. I deeply regret that.
Kenneth Starr sent his final report to the House of Representatives. The report suggested that President Clinton may have committed impeachable crimes in trying to hide his relationship with Monica Lewinsky. In the United States, to impeach a president means to bring charges in the House of Representatives. The charges result in removal from office if the president is found guilty in a trial in the Senate. The Chief Justice of the United States serves as the judge, and the senators serve as the jury. In December of 1998, the House of Representatives voted to impeach President Clinton. The House sent the charges to the Senate to hold a trial. The two articles of impeachment accused him of lying to a federal grand jury and obstructing justice. Only one other president had ever been impeached. In 1868, the House of Representatives brought charges against Andrew Johnson. The case related to his removal of a cabinet member. The Senate held a trial, but Andrew Johnson's presidency survived by one vote. The threat of impeachment led President Richard Nixon to resign in 1974 over his cover-up of political wrongdoing in the Watergate case.
It is up to the members of the House of Representatives to vote their conscience on the Constitution and the law, which I believe are clear. And I have no intention of resigning. It's never crossed my mind.
Bill Clinton still had 2 years left as president. In public opinion surveys, two-thirds of the people said they opposed removing him from office.
What I want the American people to know, what I want the Congress to know, is that I am profoundly sorry for all I have done wrong in words and deeds. I never should have misled the country, the Congress, my friends, or my family. Quite simply, I gave in to my shame. I have been condemned by my accusers with harsh words. And while it's hard to hear yourself called deceitful and manipulative, I remember Ben Franklin's admonition that our critics are our friends, for they do show us our faults.
The Senate decided President Clinton's future in February of 1999. The 100 senators held a trial to consider the charges and decide if he should be removed from office. Each charge required 67 votes to find him guilty. 10 members of the Republican majority joined Democrats in voting to clear Clinton of the perjury charge. The Senate was evenly divided on the charge of interfering with justice, thus no guilty verdict. Bill Clinton remained president of the United States. As a historical footnote, as it turned out, Republican House Speaker Newt Gingrich was himself cheating on his wife while leading the impeachment action against President Clinton. The difference, Gingrich would say years later, was that Clinton was charged with lying after he legally swore to tell the truth. In October 1999, Kenneth Starr resigned as the independent counsel. An assistant, Robert Ray, completed a final report on the Whitewater investigation. He issued his report in September 2000. The report said there was not enough evidence to prove any wrongdoing by Bill or Hillary Clinton.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.